You are listening to WPR Wrestling Public Radio, Episode 1. Hello, and welcome to Wrestling Public Radio. I am your host, Crystal Schmidt, and I'm so happy you're here to join me this week for our first episode. On this week's installment, we're going to take a more extensive look at one of my favorite wrestling gimmicks of all time, and the wrestler who is responsible for it. This episode is going to take some wild turns as we navigate stories about a vampire marriage and copious amounts of blood and fire. As a preteen who had definitely convinced herself that she was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I of course was captivated by Gangrel's storyline in WWF. My best friend and I used to patrol Dineen Park in Milwaukee, Wisconsin on summer nights when we were in middle school. We would go out armed with sticks we had found and cruise for vampires and other creeps. I can't recall anything cooler in the late 90s, early 2000s than vampire culture. It obviously extends well into the history of pop culture that vampires were both sexy and also a little dangerous, and that the concept of these blood-sucking immortal creatures has captivated the masses for decades. However, for the sake of time on the pod and our true topic being pro wrestling, we're going to focus on a small section of vampire history directly surrounding this particular moment in wrestling history. The 90s icons like Blade, Buffy, and From Dusk Till Dawn held the door open for favorites we enjoy in the present, like What We Do in the Shadows, Preacher, and True Blood. Professional wrestling has often followed the principle that what's good for business outside of wrestling can often be slapped on a kayfabe storyline. I'm not saying it always worked, but with the right people in these roles, it had the potential to be earth-shattering. Before we get to the cool stuff, let's take a brief moment to discuss some background on David Heath, more commonly known as the pro wrestler Gangrel. At the beginning of his career in the late 80s and early 90s, David Heath was working the indies in Florida and surrounding territories. He and fellow wrestler Tom Nash had formed a tag team known as the Blackhearts. They were masked wrestlers. The tag team worked across several promotions, and in the course of that time were paired with a manager, Luna, who eventually was married to Tom Nash in what sounds like a random, quickly made decision that shocked everyone. The Blackhearts and Luna were working with All Japan at the time that they disbanded. Nash and Luna subsequently divorced, and Heath and Luna actually formed a relationship later. Heath jokes in an interview that he had never really liked Luna when they first met. He says that one day Luna jumped on his back and bit him, and that's how he turned into a vampire and took an interest in her, and that's how they began dating. He still credits Luna as the reason Gangrel ever existed and the reason he got to have such an extraordinary career in professional wrestling. While they were together, Luna got a contract from WWF after they discovered her on tapes that Heath had been sending in to try to get a contract for himself. She was his valet on those tapes, and WWF took an interest and tracked her down instead. David Heath did have a brief stint with WWF while Luna was under contract with them. And while she was in WWF, Luna and Heath were married on Halloween 1994 while in vampire character, as Heath had been wrestling in other promotions as a vampire at the time already. Heath appeared in both ECW and WCW before eventually being offered a contract with WWF in 1998, but this time as part of a vampire gimmick. It's important to understand the pop culture climate of the 90s in order to understand why this gimmick worked so well despite having such a short-lived run in WWF. This character was given the nickname Gangrel, as derived from the clan in the role-playing game Vampire the Masquerade. The Gangrel were known as the most feral and predatory vampire clans in the game. Interesting fact, there was a short-lived television series based around that role-playing game called Kindred the Embraced, which was produced by none other than Aaron Spelling, who's known for Beverly Hills 90210 and our favorite witch drama at the time, Charmed. Another thing we must examine about this period of time is that while most people remember Pokemon being huge in the 90s, the two biggest things that happened in the RPG world during this time were actually Magic the Gathering and Vampire the Masquerade. We're not sure what's up with the heavy use of colons back then when placing titles on things, but we are interested in hearing your ridiculous theories. If you'd like to hit us up with some tweets and DMs, and we'll be sure to share those. Those two forces, magic and vampire, shook up the industry and fandoms while simultaneously inserting themselves into mainstream culture. At the same time, there was a budding interest in goth subculture, which was integral to Vampire the Masquerade. The creator of Vampire, Mark Rhein Hagen, was a gay man from Georgia who used the game to explore many queer and goth themes, both cultures he dabbled in himself. If you dive deeper into the Vampire book, you can see the subtle and not so subtle gay themes. It bears the name A Storytelling Game of Personal Horror, and it's not intended to be the hack and slash type game that Dungeons and Dragons is. It's intended to lend itself more to social and political maneuvering and a personal rumination of actually being the monster, on what it means to live outside of society because you were made a vampire and now you have to live in this hidden subculture with complex rules. You have powers that make you special, and yet you're not allowed to show those unique gifts to regular people. Some of the themes can definitely be read as adolescent male power fantasy, but mostly it's about being a closeted queer person in a society that won't accept you and will actively try to destroy you for what sets you apart. Do we think that Gangrel was chosen as the name because of any of that context surrounding Vampire the Masquerade? Not really. We suspect that someone at WWF grabbed a copy of the book and saw the name of the clan, thought it sounded cool, and rolled with it. But given the context surrounding the game and where the name more than likely was discovered, it is pretty fascinating that it ever made it to WWF televised programming. As gothic and vampiric culture took the mainstream, Gary Oldman had recently starred in Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1992. Nine Inch Nails, Marilyn Manson, and other bands were bringing goth culture to the mainstream musically, as did the success of the movie The Crow in 1994, which has an excellent goth soundtrack worth checking out. It was also in the 90s that the writings of Gothic author Anne Rice gained heavy traction in pop culture, so much that a 1994 blockbuster film based on her book Interview with the Vampire starred Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. Tom Cruise's character is actually named Lestat in that film, which was a ring name that Heath used while working in Puerto Rico under a vampire gimmick. Also in the literary world, Marvel Comics had brought back Blade and Hannibal King and other vampire-adjacent characters in a line of comics called Midnight Suns, which also included other supernatural comics like Ghost Rider. It's also worth mentioning here, for the integrity of the vampire WWF canon, that Triple H actually had a supporting role in Blade Trinity, the third installment of the Blade franchise, which had theatrical releases in 1998, 2002, and 2004, and raked in $415 million altogether. I personally will always hold in my heart that Edge was more deserving of this particular role, but that's another tale for another episode where I defend Edge's honor until I take my last breath. The point I'm making is that the 90s were a really big time for vampires. David Heath recognized this, and with the encouragement of his wife Luna, pitched this overall idea for a vampire gimmick, complete with a ring of fire and spewing blood, as a tribute to Gene Simmons and Kiss. As he explained his ideas to the creative team led by Bruce Prichard and Vince Russo at the time, he had them convinced enough to allow it to move forward. Gangrel's gimmick nestled excellently into the vibe that the Attitude Era consisted of. The lights would go down, and viewers would hear this eerie, whisper-like breathing sound that would reach into every corner of the arena. His music would continue with an ominous, down-tuned guitar riff as a ring of fire would appear on the main stage, with red lights beaming all around. On an elevator platform that Vince Russo was adamant about using, Gangrel would rise, dressed in a ruffled white shirt from Hot Topic, very reminiscent of the puffy shirt from that one Seinfeld episode, and he'd be carrying this goblet of stage blood. And then he would saunter to the ring, drink the blood, and through his fangs would spit red mist into the air that would spatter his white shirt and the crowd around him. At one event, he even sprayed blood on Donald Trump in an apparent prank that Vince McMahon had planned without anyone else's knowledge. Watching the episode of Table for Three with Edge and Christian, joined by the Hardy Boys, they all reflect on how short-lived that gimmick truly was in WWF, but how much of an impact it made because people still talk about it today. I feel very strongly that it's one of the best entrances for a gimmick in WWF history, and it left its mark on me as a young wrestling fan. It's a scene that still brings up feelings of fear and excitement when I watch old footage from the 90s. Gangrel debuted on TV in 1998 on Sunday Night Heat, scared the living hell out of all of us, and then quickly formed the gothic vampire stable known as The Brood, with Edge and Christian by his side. The three of them created this very eye-catching hybrid old-school versus new-school vampire look. Gangrel and Christian often wore the traditional white ruffled shirt, while Edge opted for the more modern look of a patent leather duster with no shirt underneath. They became known for creating scenes where the house lights in the arena would go out for a moment, and when they would come back up, an opponent of theirs would be covered in blood in the ring. Because of the gimmick, and being billed from the other side of darkness, Gangrel was seeing new opportunity with WWF. He and the Brood joined up with The Undertaker for a brief moment while he was leading his Ministry of Darkness faction. This involvement with a WWE legend like The Undertaker has also cemented their place in the memory of all wrestling fans. After the Brood split from the Ministry of Darkness, they began a feud with the Hardy Boys. During this feud, Gangrel betrayed Edge and Christian and began working with the Hardy Boys in a new faction known by the very original name, the New Brood. This particular faction was very short-lived, and Gangrel became a singles wrestler managed by his wife Luna until WWF released him in 2001. He had maintained his vampire persona until his departure from WWF. Luna and Heath divorced in 2006 after 12 years of marriage, which involved a lot of drug use from both parties, according to David Heath. Sadly, Luna passed away in 2010 from a prescription drug overdose. Since 2001, Heath has been wrestling on the indie circuit and has had several casual appearances in WWE and its affiliated divisions. He recently had a viral moment in the ring during Florida SuperCon, where he beat down Jeffrey, the Toys R Us giraffe. It's certainly worth searching on YouTube. He also runs Gangrel's Wrestling Asylum in Florida, helping coach future generations. On weekdays, he trains students, and on weekends, he'll make appearances for independent promotions across the country. You can absolutely still catch him headlining at local events near you, once we're not in the middle of a pandemic. I want to thank you all for joining me today on this journey into the perfect 90s storm that allowed a vampire to rule over pro wrestling and our nightmares. It couldn't have existed in such an untethered way in any other era of WWE. I'd also like to give a special thanks to my agent, Baxter from over at Collect and Destroy, as well as consultant, friend of the pod, and RPG expert Jason Garcia, who helped me throw this thing on wheels. Join us next time for more tales of the wrestling world and how pop culture and the world around us shape storylines. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at WPR Media, as well as Facebook and Instagram at Wrestling Public Radio. This is Crystal Schmidt signing off for Wrestling Public Radio. If you or someone you know is seeking help for substance abuse, SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, can help. SAMHSA's National Helpline is a free, confidential, 24/7, 365-day-a-year treatment referral and information service in both English and Spanish for individuals and families facing mental and/or substance abuse disorders. This service provides referrals to local treatment facilities, support groups, and community-based organizations. They can be reached at 1-800-662-HELP. That number again is 1-800-662-HELP. Stay alive, friends.